6:30 on Monday, time for Geek Speak. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computers, systems, and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Monday night on KOSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information at Seagate.com. Tonight on Geek Speak, we're going to have a full house of geeks. We're talking about weather. We're talking about technology and weather, and sometimes how weather really affects technology, specifically brownouts, power surges, power outages, and how your computers and home appliances can survive with a little bit of help from more technology. In the air room tonight, I'm going to have all the geeks. We got Chris Dumphy, we got Miles Elam, we got Sean Cleveland, we got John Tracy, and of course, Quinn will be on in a little bit as well. And we're going to take your calls if you have any stories pertaining to your systems throughout the next hour, specifically if your system didn't come back up after a power outage. The phone numbers, if you'd like to join our discussion at any time, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. And we're starting the show right off the bat with the first thing you're going to need to protect your computer during a power problem. Miles?
Well, your basic thing that you want to have is a surge protector.
And what is a surge protector?
It's, for example, when you have those power strips that have, you know, six connectors, plug it into the wall, plug six appliances or, you know, computer pieces into
okay,
it.
A power strip is what you're saying.
Power strip, uh-huh. Yeah. That will usually have a fuse in it so that if too much power goes to it, it will break the power so that, you know, no power goes through, but at least you're not frying everything that's connected to it.
Okay. But, I mean, that's really, I guess, a high voltage peak, and then it's going to draw more current, and therefore that fuse is going to blow. That's a general concept.
Yeah.
I guess the idea is the fuse is going to burn quick enough prior to any of your electronics destroyed. That's
yeah,
the hope.
Yeah. And in practice, it does happen. I mean, the fuse will go off, especially if you get a good one. You know, the $10 ones, you're not going to be as safe as one that you pay a little more for. I hate to say it, you know, pay more. But, you know, when you get down to the $10 ones, you start getting into really cheap range where, you know.
Right. A really good power surge will actually take a spike. No problem, and your computer will continue.
We're going to talk about that filtering types of in just a minute. Please keep in mind the views expressed on GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Now, Miles, you went over to a local electronics store today and took a look at what they had on the shelf, and did you see any in that $10 range, that the cheap ones?
Or $11, but
those are just a fuse. And basically, any power strip you have, if it's being sold in the U.S., it's going to have a CE mark, and for that, it's going to have a fuse.
Yeah.
So they pretty much all do it. The only concern you'd have is if the fuse was so large that the current going through could destroy the unit anyway. So these are normally rated for about 10 amps, sometimes 15, even up to 20. And there's some types that have breakers on them, and actually that's less effective than a fuse type because a breaker takes a little bit more time to switch over, turn off. So that's an interesting point that you might actually want to go with the fuse type. So the next stage, what's after that?
You have the power regulators. They're filters, basically, that if many times the power, especially folks who are up in Santa Cruz Mountains, you're going to have the power isn't going to be exactly the amount that you want from your AC outlet.
This is what Sean was just talking about, kind of peaks, problems?
Brownouts. The power could drop a little bit lower or raise a little bit higher.
Yeah, that's the
problem. Or you might
get
a spike. Oftentimes during storms, you'll notice that you power surge in your house. That's a power spike, which means you're getting more power than you really need.
If the brightness of the lights in your house changes, you either have ghosts or you have bad power coming in, and you definitely would want to seek out professional help.
And we see that all the time when power is about to go out. Like, you'll see, like, power, the lights drop out for a second, and then the power go out, or drop out, come back on, then goes bright for a second. And that kind of fluctuations you guys are talking about, that some power supplies devices actually have filtering that will get rid of that. How do they do that?
They'll handle that to some extent. I don't know specifically the mechanics for it. I would assume that there's just some capacitances built up within the unit so that when it drops below a certain level, it can just compensate for it.
I can't tell you how many times today, this morning, that I was getting spikes and the power was going off for a split second coming back on.
What were you doing? Did you turn off all your computers? Or?
No, I actually use what's called a UPS.
Okay, and we're going to get to those.
We'll get to that. But you know, not all machines have UPSs, and the ones that were on power surges or power protector, surge protector, they were just fine. They ran just fine. So with a good surge protector, you can still keep running, depending on how long the power gets cut
for. So they probably have some type of line equalization on it.
I think it's a very expensive one, but you get what you pay for.
Yeah, as you start getting into the $30, $40, $50 models, that's what you...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, a lot depends on the quality of the power supply in your computer itself. That's for handling brownouts, it's actually where the quality plays more of an effect than the surge protectors hook
no,
up to.
That, of course, you know, I'm running a dual redundant 400-watt power supply.
No, of course, Chris, with that, though, there is the... I mean, if you have a really good power supply UPS or surge protector, and the power supply itself never even sees a brownout or any fluctuations, it's either on or off, then, of course, it doesn't really matter what type of power supply you have. But there are other problems. And even if you have a perfect solution where, in a surge protector, where as soon as there's something that it can't filter for, it can't compensate for, even if it's a high-end one, it kills the power so that no unexpected power voltages go through. Speaking of power problems,
wow!
not staged for effect, actual storm. The
still running, right?
Yeah, we just
yeah, everything's still running. We
had our lights dim in the studio just for folks that are listening.
And the issue, of course, is that even with a total power loss that's really clean, it can still damage your computer because a hard drive can have problems with that. So
a lot of electronics will have problems with brownouts with just a little bit. Less than what it needs.
What about it just being turned off just right away, like unplugging the plug kind of thing? That can be bad for a hard drive as well.
Bad.
Except for Palm OS. Palm OS is okay with that.
The nice thing about laptops, actually, one of the great side effects of laptops or hand electronics is they have a built-in UPS. They have a battery sitting in between your, even if you're using your laptop plugged into the wall. You could mess with the power all you want. The battery is preventing things.
Miles, are we ready to start talking about UPSs? Have we talked about the surge protector level? I mean, what happens after surge protector? You just jump into UPSs and they're completely different, or they have some common
ideas? Like I said, there's also the line regulators. That's kind of a middle ground between the two, where you have just making sure that the voltage is at an even level as opposed to fluctuating up and down.
You want to keep the supply clean, right? You don't want any fluctuation whatsoever.
In a perfect world, your voltage coming from the wall would be this this perfect level.
120 volts, 60 amps, 60 hertz.
But in the real world, there's peaks and valleys in that signal coming through.
Now, when you were over at the store today looking at the prices of these, what's the difference between a line cleaner and a surge protector, price-wise?
A line cleaner is going to get up into that a little over $100.
Okay.
And the surge protectors are going to be in a range of about, $10 for the really cheapest ones to, $50, $60 for the better models.
And a line protector does everything a surge protector does and more, for the most part.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
A line protector will actually do some things that UPSs don't. We'll cover that later.
We got a call
for low end UPSs.
We got a call from Monterey. We're going to go ahead and go to now because she's short on time. Satya from Monterey, welcome
Sarita.
To Geek Speak. I'm sorry, say it again.
Sarita.
Yeah. Welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Thank you. I thought I was going to talk to somebody privately while you all were chatting.
Ha ha.
because I'm in a big rush to get to my women's group, but this issue has plagued me so horribly that I'm desperate for assistance.
Well, we'll help you, and hundreds of people will hear you.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, I live in Pacific Grove, and in early November, we had a power outage. And it was a Thursday, And the reason that matters is because I'm pretty sure that my son had the computer on. And so at some point, I have a UPS. Well, that beep that we all heard, uh-huh. What happens is it keeps making that.
Right.
And so I guess, like a total idiot, I turned it off.
Turned off the UPS?
The UPS.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I didn't shut down the computer, because the whole point is to give you time to shut it down properly. Is
sure,
that right?
Sure. Uh-huh.
So I don't think I did any of that, because I just wasn't thinking, because I wasn't the one who had been using the computer, and the noise was irritating.
Okay.
So after that,
the computer
when
hasn't
the power
come back
came
up.
Back on, our phone working, our internet.
Okay, we're losing you because I think it's a cell phone problem, but I do have some notes on this. It's basically after she got back online, or after she got back on power, her phone lines worked and her computer worked, but she couldn't dial up to her ISP. She couldn't get online.
The phone line did not work.
Oh, the phone line did not work.
Did not work and came back after a technician came and looked at it, but the internet continued intermittently.
Did you have your phone line plugged into the UPS?
I don't think so.
See, this is one of the classic mistakes people make is when you're defending, you're building a fortress around your computer with these good quality surge suppressors or UPSs, but every cable coming in and out of your, whether it's your computer or your stereo equipment, needs to be protected. So if there was a big surge, maybe particularly, it doesn't happen so much on the West Coast where we don't have lightning storms, but in the Midwest, when lightning strikes, there's a huge surge of electricity going not just on the power lines, but also on the phone line. And if your phone line is plugged straight into the computer and is not going through a phone line surge suppressor, that can be what destroys your computer right there.
Yep.
So when you say that your internet access was intermittent, do you mean that you were able to connect and use it, and then it just wasn't as stable as it was before?
No, it was like in the morning we could get on, but in the afternoon we couldn't.
Well, it could be that you have line noise and that they tried to fix. I mean, they could have phone problems in the entire system, and that you have a new phone line somewhere out there, or there's a noise on the line. I'm not even so sure it's your computer or your modem.
Because I've gone through a whole process. They came out and the phone was running. Since the internet had worked that day, we'd let them know it had been intermittent, but it was working, so I don't think they did anything to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually, like by the week of Thanksgiving, this had started in early November, it was out completely. And so then finally...
It was a while after this power outage?
Yeah, it was.
You know, I don't think this is associated with the power outage at all.
Well, I think that's it might be associated with the power outage, just with a social dynamic where everybody with the power out is calling everyone else.
Or the modem could have suffered damage and kind of pushed it over the edge.
Have you contacted your ISP, your internet service provider?
It's been a nightmare, a total nightmare.
And what are they saying?
Well, ultimately, the final place that I got to after it was escalated and farmed out to one of their subcontractors and the whole thing... The first one who came said that there was no signal coming into the phone line, like the box at the house, and he thought it was like 80 feet out. Then the guy from Pac Bell came. I have SBC Global.
Mm-hmm. Do you have DSL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you using terminators on your phone lines?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think she's got that because the ISP came out and talked to her about it. So what did the phone company say?
The phone company said I had sync.
Okay, so you had an okay connection there.
Yeah,
you know, this is one of those problems with going with a large ISP. They don't necessarily know your local problems. It's a tough one to figure out. One way to do it is if you have got a friend with a DSL. I mean, you can try troubleshooting yourself.
Well, my friend who's unfortunately left today to Japan to start up a startup there, he came and he took my DSL modem home. It worked at his house.
Okay.
And he got me totally configured so that I could access via dial-up.
Uh-huh.
The next day, I couldn't do that. I mean, I got on, I downloaded like 53 emails, the whole thing. But, and that slow way, like when it dials
so
up.
Okay, so I really think what's happening is you got noise on your line. You've got like a next-door neighbor and your lines are cross-talking with each other. And so
if they're on
the phone, you've got a problem. So in the morning when they're asleep, it's okay, and then they get a phone call and everything gets messed up.
Some squatters just moved into a cottage on our property.
Okay, are they using the phone?
I don't know.
Well, you might want to check that out. Good luck.
Thank you.
Sorry I can't help you more.
Okay, thanks a lot.
What a disaster, huh? but in any case, we're talking about UPSs. John?
I had a question. I was off getting promos and stuff when you guys were talking about laptops.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. Why can't we use laptops as servers? They have built-in keyboard, built-in display, built-in UPS that'll last for hours.
Why? As servers, as in like a file server or a web server?
Not something that high traffic, but like a mail server or, you know, DNS server.
Well, there's no reason why you can't use it.
You totally can. I mean, the real issue, of course, is the laptop is normally more expensive than a comparable machine that's a desktop, and you don't need to be portable.
But
not
if you factor in the cost of a four-hour UPS for a machine that's running as a server.
A four-hour UPS?
Most laptops can't do 4 hours.
Your TI can.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't.
A laptop can with the screen off, actually.
Yeah.
And if it's acting as a server, you'd have the screen turned off.
I don't have a problem with it. I wouldn't trust it for, like, I mean, you know, when you're talking about buying a server, you're spending extra money to make sure the hard drives are good and can run all the time. You're making sure that the power supply is going to stay up and stuff. And a laptop's just not designed to be that kind of machine.
The big reason also is laptops are not really well suited to incremental maintenance. So servers, you want to go and be able to quickly get in and change
the hard drive, swap the power supply,
fix the modem. If a modem goes out, you know, server, you need to do quick maintenance. On a laptop, you have to send it off for 3 weeks. So that's one of the big reasons.
We got Robin from Santa Cruz asking a question. I'm not sure we're going to be able to answer, but Robin, please help.
Hi, Lyle. Hi. I appreciate your show, and I like the fact that you're on for an hour tonight.
Okay.
This is more a general power question, and I've always been curious. I know I can go to my phone, my power bill, and I can see, you know, what
grid
I'm associated with, but I'd like to know if there's some place where I could actually see that on a map.
Because why does down the street there's no power and all of a sudden you have power? Kind
exactly,
of
yeah. And I go across Soquel Drive and everybody's got power and nobody on my side does. So where does it end?
I totally want that too. Any of the geeks know how to do this? Is there any mapping?
Would there be some GIS information that would contain that?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be your PG&E in this area is going to be the company that has those maps. Whether they're surfacing to the public or not, I would guess that they don't. And I would guess that in this whole, you know, concept of security, they definitely don't, because you could use that information. And I'm not saying that it's not possible to get that information. I just think that it's not, you know, a simple thing.
Right. I just thought one of you guys might know.
No, I don't. But I'm inviting all listeners that might know this information, please call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877, because we'd love to know how to do a mapping of electric grids.
We're map geeks.
Yes.
Me too. Stay tuned. Thanks,
Robin.
Bye.
Of course,
Bye.
The only time you could access that is when you had power, and when you did, you know, wouldn't make you wouldn't really care.
No, I don't know.
Maybe
you could ask somebody to check for you.
The power grids wouldn't change. Once you got, like, a picture of it,
if you
printed it out or, you know, whatever, then you'd be able to reference it, you know, by candlelight.
Well, see, also, how is this? My geek example is I have my DSL modem and my router and my 802.11 hub plugged into my UPS.
Geek.
And so I was, when the power went out, I had a couple hours worth of a wireless surfing from the couch with my laptop before the UPS ran dry.
In candlelight.
Well, the laptop light, the gentle glow of the laptop.
So we're mentioning UPS a lot here, but we haven't talked about the technology.
No, we haven't, and
they're
we should.
They're the brown trucks. Yes. They deliver
On the next
power.
Talk of the Bay, host Anna Zachary talks to local author and activist Bill Kane about his new book, Passing on the Spirit, Celebrating Eccentric. Yes, mentors. Sorry. Passing on the Spirit, Celebrating Eccentric Mentors. That's Talk of the Bay tomorrow here at 6:30 on KOSP. For more information about our talk shows, you can visit kosp.org. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room, we have Chris Dumphy, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. We're talking about problems pertaining to unstable power, mostly due to storms. We're about to get into UPSs, and I'm welcoming anyone to call in with subjects pertaining to their topic, or just questions in general in kind of that realm, my computer's broken things. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go into UPSs now.
See, what I want to know is why when you were going for the word eccentric, you pointed at me.
I that's the mapping in my head. It's this whole graphic thing. I'm so sorry.
Miles is eccentric.
Yes.
Okay. Whatever.
This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives, PCs, and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukebox. Information is at Seagate.com. John, you messed me up. Laptops and servers are now intertwined in my mind.
I think Lyle just suffered a brownout.
I think so.
Actually, I just heard that Seagate is making a notebook. hard drive again.
Notebook hard drive? Oh, for hard. Oh, I see.
I don't know if it's available.
It's for notebook servers.
To the world at large, but maybe.
I want to make a server on my iPod, actually.
So UPSs, we got into that the low-end UPSs or the beginning phase UPSs totally kind of overlap the surge protectors and line filters.
What does UPS stand for?
Yeah, let's do that.
Uninterruptible
power supply.
Or uninterrupted power supply, not uninterruptible.
Yeah.
I have to complain about false advertising because mine was interrupted after it was on for about 4 hours yesterday. And God.
Okay, what's the general...
Like a class action lawsuit to me.
Miles, what's the general makeup of a UPS?
It's this really, usually fairly sizable, very heavy box. They basically contain a battery, a very very large battery.
Like a car battery type thing? That size?
Some of them can get that big.
Yeah,
most of them are a little bit smaller than that.
Okay.
But most of the ones you're going to bring into your home are about the size of a shoebox.
Mm-hmm. And they're used for computers, but they're used for any kind of electronics you want to keep on all the time, right?
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, underneath the desk here in the air room, there are three UPSs. They're relatively small, and they're powering all the board. And that's why when we had a power fluctuation before the generator kicks in, it takes care of the board and keeps everything running.
I heard that high-pitched beep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what shortly happened.
You know, I wanted to address that woman because I know the beeping of my UPS drives my wife, Maggie, who's answering phones here, crazy. And I think it's just because I'm too lazy to turn it off. It has to be done through firmware hooked up to my computer. And I don't even know where those cables are anymore. But you can turn those off. So you might want to pull
Why would you want to turn them on? If that's it's telling you to shut your machine down, that's a general concept.
But if the power's out, you generally know you should shut it down anyway.
And when the lights go out, that's a hint.
And if you're in bed and the power goes off, then you start hearing this beep, 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 and then you need to get up and go turn the damn thing off because you can't get to sleep. So it can be an issue just because you're not at the computer.
Right.
Yeah, at the same time, that beep, beep, beep getting you out of bed, it probably should get you out of bed because you're supposed to be getting up, turning off your computer, making sure it's shut down correctly.
Well, not necessarily because most new UPSs have software built into them where you can actually say to turn the machine off for you. If the power goes on.
Ah, that's true.
But those UPSs, you can also tell it to turn itself off.
You can do all of that.
After it's already has no load.
Right.
So if you have the software that's doing that, then that you've got it set. It will turn everything off that's connected to it and then shut down itself.
Right.
Okay, so UPS is basically a battery varying in size depending on how big of a UPS you want to get. Mm-hmm. And then some kind of thing that translates that probably DC, well, definitely DC battery voltage into line level voltage.
Right.
And last, they recommend making sure you get one that's large enough for your equipment to last how long?
It depends on how big what the capacity of your UPS is.
Okay, but I mean, what's the recommendation for how long you should have things runnable? Like 5 minutes?
It depends upon the person. If the only time you ever use your computer, or the only time your computer is on, rather, is when you're sitting in front of it, in other words, whenever you leave it, you're always turning it off, you just have a simple desktop computer, not a full server or tower, just a small little desktop computer with a small monitor, like a 15-inch monitor or 14-inch monitor. You can get away with a relatively small UPS, like a 350-volt amp UPS, and that will give you about 5 minutes of power, give or take. There's never an absolute number on this. It'll depend upon what your setup is.
It really depends on what you have plugged into it. What is the load and how big is the battery
right.
in the UPS?
But as I said, like a standard desktop system with a 14 or 15-inch monitor, you're going with that small UPS, you're going to get about 5 minutes of time to save all your work and shut down the computer.
But if you wanted more time, you could get a bigger UPS, plug it in, the same equipment into it, and you would get more time
right.
before you had to shut down.
Or if you had a larger monitor, like a 17-inch or a 21-inch, you'll need to get a bigger UPS in order to. You'll still get only 5 minutes, but for example, if you went up the next level or two.
But then, if you got like an LCD, which uses a lot less power, then you're talking about lasting for a long time on a large UPS.
Well, you're talking about going to probably the 7 to 10 minute range with that smallest UPS, because the computer's still going to be having some draw. But you're right; the monitor is going to be going through an LCD monitor is going to give you a lot more time.
I have a question. Why should you care about having a UPS hooked up to your computer? I mean, I know why, but people out there are probably going, well, because these things aren't cheap. They're like, they start at $100 for the cheap ones.
They actually start a little cheaper.
Well,
they
start at, you know, 75, 80,
but I mean, if you're going to go down to an office supply store and get one, they're going to be in the $100.
Well, you get everything that a surge protector gives you, plus you get a battery backup.
But why is that important?
Oftentimes the power will go off, and it will only stay off for a minute or two.
How valuable is that spreadsheet you're writing?
Yeah.
And then, boom, it's gone.
I think more important than that, how valuable is that hard drive that all the data is contained on?
Well, you back that up every day anyway, so it's just a...
Yeah. Everybody out there is backing up their data on their hard drive on a regular basis, right?
At least annually.
So I think what John's asking is, how dangerous is it for a computer to just lose power all of a sudden? Can it hurt? Can it damage the hardware? Can you lose data?
Well, as far as just a straight turning the power off, I wouldn't imagine so, because that's basically what you're doing with the power switch on your computer. You're taking away all the power.
But during something like the tree falling on the wire, sometimes it's accompanied by a surge that the UPS can actually absorb.
Right.
It can dissipate that surge in the battery.
But a surge protector would catch that as well.
Yeah.
The big thing is you will lose whatever files you currently have open, and some programs have automatic saves, but that might only be at a 5-minute interval or a 15-minute interval. So you might think, oh, I'm only losing 5 minutes worth of work, but the catch that can really hit you if you have a sudden power loss is, if it's in the process of doing that save, then you could have the nightmare scenario. If it's in the middle of saving something, it's just finished erasing the old file and it's writing the new one, and I've had it happen to me on many occasions where I thought I had automatic saves turned on and I ended up with a file with nothing in it.
Right.
Or a corrupted file. Funny. When I do training, I tell people, the first thing you should do is start your document, save it, and then continually save it a lot. And the thing is, if you have a power outage while you're doing it, save a lot, which happens, my practice is to save all the time. When you have that interruption, that's exactly when you're most vulnerable to data loss. So the more you save with the power potential problem, the more likely you are to have your data corrupted.
Right.
At the same time, if you don't save at all and you get a power outage that entire time span, you've lost your data. So it's kind of a problem, but it's very easy to solve. Yeah. You just have to spend some money.
And anyone who's ever turned off their computer without doing a proper shutdown, I'm sure, has come across the big blue scan disk screen that says, you did not shut down your computer properly, and now I'm going to check the file system.
Right.
And
make sure that everything's correct.
That is an important warning. That's not there just for show. That's saying your operating system really wants you to make sure everything is copacetic before the computer shuts down.
So you shouldn't cancel that out of that?
Right.
Never.
Okay. And losing the power while you're reading and writing to your hard drive is not a good thing for your hard drive, because the actual head that is floating over the platter doing the reading and writing, it stops wherever the power is turned off.
Well, there will probably be enough capacitance in the drive to be able to have
the technology is getting better where it parked itself, but you're better off just saving your data and shutting down gracefully, making sure all your electronics are shut down like they're supposed to be. I mean,
it's important.
Not everybody has newer hard drives.
Well, hard drives have been auto-parking for quite a while now.
You'd be surprised. It's only been since late 90s.
I remember...
I covered this technology pretty heavily at the magazine. That technology wasn't introduced until like 96, 97.
See, I remember 96, 97 was a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm still remembering back in the days of DOS where when you were going to move your computer, you ran a program called Park, which actually told the head on the hard drive to move off to the side.
Yes, Miles, when you were messing with computers when you first started, when you were six, that's what you need to do.
When you were organizers.
We had a call from David of Santa Cruz. DSL variable speed. He understands that DSL has, it can vary in max speed. How can he find out what his real speed is? Anybody?
There's to find out what your actual real world speeds are, I always go to a site called DSLReports.com, and they've got three different bandwidth tests that you could run. They're little JavaScript apps. You just click on them. If you go to DSL Reports, you click on Tools, and then you can click on Speed Tests, and then you could click on an East Coast server or a West Coast server. Click on that, and it'll run for about 5 minutes, and then it'll tell you exactly how fast your
DSLReports.com?
Yeah. Okay. And there's several other sites that do that same sort of bandwidth testing.
And the only concern is that if your neighbor does that at the same time, or someone else in the house, of course, does that at the same time, then it's going to have the actual result.
Well, that's with cable.
Yeah, with cable, not with DSL.
Well, even with DSL, if your DSL, like Sean's DSL, is really fast, it's almost coming up to the T1 speed.
Not really.
Oh, I thought it was for a while.
I had to get it cut in half.
Oh, that's right.
I'm sure.
So if someone has close to T1 speeds, the DSL link is actually not the weakest point. It could be the phone box out to the next server. So if you've got, five people with a lot of bandwidth going on, I mean, the thing is these things create heavy load. If lots of people create heavy load at the same time, you'll see the collision.
Yeah, not really with DSL, though.
Miles is shaking his head.
DSL is all about distance.
Right, that's true. It's true. Yeah. So anyway, DSLReports.com.
Yeah, I think what you're thinking of, cable modems, that's definitely the case, where in the neighborhood, if everybody's sharing the same bandwidth in the neighborhood, and you may get really fast, but if everybody else is on the line, then you're going to go much, much lower.
Yeah, Friday night, you have no connectivity, it's crawling along, and maybe Sunday at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're free to go.
So. Definitely a megasecond.
This is GeekSpeak. We're talking about, we're talking about your computers, but we're talking about problems with power outages and stuff. In the air room is Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Chris Dumphy. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. We're going an hour today, so we're pushing We're pushing Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang up a half an hour due to storm things, and then all of a sudden we got some communication errors. In any case, he's going to be in here at 7:30, so stay tuned. He will be here. Right now you can listen to Stardate.
Stardate, December 16th. A nasty storm was pounding the coast of England near Dover before dawn on December 17, 1852. Strong winds, heavy rain and sleet, and deep red flashes of lightning stirred the night. They also stirred Francis Higginson, who walked along the beach and watched a strange scene unfold. He reported his observations in a letter to the Royal Society of London. Higginson wrote that around 5 a.m., a dark triangular cloud appeared in the southeast, moving into the teeth of the wind. As the Royal Society reported, Higginson then, quote, perceived in the center of the cloud a dull, red, obscure nucleus or fireball, apparently about half the diameter of the moon, having a tail 5 or 6 times that length, end quote. He realized the object was a meteor, a chunk of rock from beyond Earth plunging through our planet's atmosphere. To continue the narration, the meteor descended with great velocity, accompanied by a detonating, hurtling, hissing sound. At 5:03, the nucleus suddenly exploded, giving out an intensely brilliant light, which rendered the minutest objects distinctly visible. The dense body of the meteorite seemed to fall in the water about 1/2 mile from the land, as indicated by a great volume of spray, which rose foaming in the distance. Other witnesses reported the fireball, but none in such detail as Higginson, who watched a rare cosmic event 150 years ago. We're on the World Wide Web at stardate.org. I'm Sandy Wood.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo. We're on the web at kosp.org. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room is Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Miles Elam, and Chris Dumphy. We are talking about your computer problems and concerns regarding technology, mostly power outages. Program support is from Solar Technology, serving the Santa Cruz and Monterey Bay area with solar energy for homes and businesses. Solar Technologies offers an alternative to the big power company. For more information, 460-1250.
Take 8.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today,
I never needed
anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured.
We all need a little bit of help, and that's why GeekSpeak's here every week to help you out on Monday nights. This program is supported in part by our community of contributing listeners, and we thank you all for your support. Everyone that calls into the show really helps GeekSpeak out, makes us not sound like a whole bunch of geeks talking alone. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we are talking about power outages and how it affects your computers, specifically right now, UPSs.
UPS is an uninterruptible power supply. You have a battery in, large battery to plug into.
How big should it be?
That's the basic problem, right?
Yeah.
As I said, if you just have a simple desktop and a small monitor, then you can probably get by with the 350-volt amp UPS, which will run you about $50.
So that's kind of the low-end small ones.
That's the very low-end, yeah.
Right. You know, we should talk about this volt-amp versus wattage thing.
Do you know what it is? That's the thing that's
good. That's
the thing that doesn't make any sense
to me. Here.
Yeah.
And Miles and I were talking about this, and I wasn't going to bring it up because I felt so stupid. Maybe somebody can help us out. You take voltage and you take amperage, you multiply it together, and that's how you get wattage. Mm-hmm. So the idea of the volt amp being different than wattage is confusing to me. I don't know why that definition is there. I am sure it's one point in my electronics degree I understood. If Boom's listening, and maybe he can call us and tell us why. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. The question on the table is, what's the difference between volt amp and wattage?
That's a good question, because every time you buy a UPS, I mean, you're shopping around for UPS, right. You ask, what size should I get? They say, well, how many watts do you run? How many volt amps do you run?
And that's the thing, is in these power supplies, they show two different sizes. But in reality, that's how you calculate wattage.
You want the volt amps to be larger than the wattage that you're using.
My guess is that it has to do with AC versus DC. In a DC system, you take voltage and amperage, and you multiply together, and that's how you get wattage. But in an AC system, you actually multiply voltage times 7.2 or something like that to compensate for the sine wave, and you have a lower power consumption. So the concept of, I've got 110 volts, multiplied by my amperage gives you my volt amps, and that is a higher number than what wattage would be of those two things, also multiplied by 0.72. If you guys do the math on that, that's probably what you get.
Whew,
it came to me. Thank goodness it came to me. Okay, but I might be insane, so call in if I am. We are going to jump right to another Troxel. In fact, my brother, Chris Troxel in Seaside. Welcome to Geek Speed, Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
Quite well. And what's your question?
The question is, I was trying to hook up the modem on my Macintosh because I had a power outage in my brain. It is giving me some trouble. When I go to hook it up and I go to connect on my modem, it tells me that there is something else connected to that port and therefore cannot use the modem. But I can't find what it is that's using that port, and is there any way that I can find it?
Well, you're so lucky that John is here because John can answer this.
How many ports do you have in your brain?
Is this an older Mac with the serial ports?
It's an older Mac, and that's why Sean and I gave him a new dual processor machine, not
like
a Mac,
talk
unfortunately.
About that machine?
No, let's not talk about that machine.
Just bring it with you Christmas holiday.
What happens on these older Macs is there's two ports, two serial ports. One's for printers, one's a communication port, one's a printer port. They're really both communication ports, but one's for modem, one's for printer. So what's happened is you've plugged your modem in. And something else is using the port. What's using the port is Apple Talk. So what you need to do is go in and turn Apple Talk off.
Uh-huh.
And then nothing should be talking on that port. If it still says that port is in use, here comes one of those wacky Mac things. You have to zap your parameter RAM. I'm not making that up, Chris.
How do you do it?
When you start up your computer, you'll hear the startup tone. Hold down Command, Option, P, and R. Command being Apple. Apple, Option, P, and R.
Option P and R.
Yeah, Apple Option P and R, right when it does the startup tone.
Uh-huh.
Let it do the startup tone again, and if you're superstitious, let it do it a couple more times, and then let go. What that does is it clears out the parameter RAM, which contains information like the time and date your computer set to, the port settings, which is what you're clearing out here, and a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
So first turn off Apple Talk. If that doesn't work, zap the parameter RAM.
Chris, cool. Good luck. Give us a call after. Give me a call afterwards if it doesn't work out. Thanks for calling in.
Chris, by the way, is a total music geek.
KUSB thanks Riva Fish House Bar and Cafe for providing a grant in support of this program. Riva Fish House Bar and Cafe is located on the wharf in Santa Cruz, featuring a spicy selection of seafood, pasta, and sandwiches.
KUSB thanks Ben Rice for supporting Two Steps from the Blues. Ben Rice, a Santa Cruz attorney, helps people charged with crimes in the Monterey and San Francisco Bay Areas. Information regarding criminal law and courts is available online at benricelaw.com.
And, of course, normally Two Steps in the Blues is on right now, and it will be here in about another 20 minutes. Going right back off to another call. Hello, Theo from Santa Cruz.
Is that me?
I think so. Is that you? Are you?
My name is Ciro.
Ciro, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Hey, great. Well, first of all, I want to chastise you guys because I was listening to your program earlier as I passed through Los Gatos, and you were talking about having low power in your house, and it's not low power, it's low voltage.
Right. Yes.
As an engineer, I had to nail you guys for that.
Consider us spanked.
Okay. Very good. I've got a problem that didn't happen because of the power outages, but it might have. I think I lost the primary hard disk on my PC, and it's an ancient PC. I was planning to replace it sometime soon. It's a 166 megahertz Pentium 1 or something like that.
Okay.
And what I'm trying to figure out is if there's any hope of salvaging the data on the drive, because being a bad boy and not having backed up in the last, eight or 9 years. But when I try to boot it, it comes up, it runs scan disk, it complains about something in I think it's the temp space on C.
You know,
wind temp.
It depends on how much money you want to put into getting this data back.
Okay.
Actually, if that hard drive is still running and you can actually see hard drive letters and it's attempting to boot, it's just not getting into Windows. If you install...
Yeah, I can't... Well, it's running Win 95, so I can't, you know, stick a floppy in and boot off the floppy, I don't think.
Yeah, right. So now, with software, you can get to that data. What you're going to need to do, though, is get another hard drive and install Windows on it.
Do you have a second machine? Do you have another machine?
No, I'm planning to get another machine. And my strategy for porting the data was going to be, when I got the new machine, I was going to take the... it's got a 2-gig drive in there that it came with, and then when I ran out of space, I stuck a 10-gig drive in there. And so the C drive has certain things on it I'd like to try and restore. The D drive has more stuff that I'm pretty sure I'll be
able
to get.
When you buy your new computer, just... Oh.
Yeah, I have more to say. OnTrack is a software maker who actually makes hard drive recovery software. And I believe if you go buy their software, it comes with a floppy that allows you to access the data that's on that hard drive. OnTrack System Recovery.
OnTrack System Recovery.
Now, also, you can access that software from within an OS, too. Sometimes you don't even need system recovery software. Those partitions are readable. You're just not able to boot into the OS. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking is probably happening.
Get a new machine and throw your hard drives in the new machine.
Yeah, what you do is when you get the new machine, just take the drives out of your old one and make sure you change them to be the slave drive so they don't try and boot. So there'll be a little jumper on the hard drive. And
you put them in one of the C drives, you can just put them on the second channel.
Well, you'll probably have a CD on the second channel. So make it slave and make both of them slave. One of them is going to be slave and throw them on each of your extra channels on the board.
Yeah, and then
you might have to get a different cable.
Yeah, I figured I'll have to fiddle around with that.
It sounds like you're in the right stages. Mm-hmm.
But certainly, Chris, that's what you want to do first.
Exactly.
Before you spend any money on recovery software, try and get that data.
Just
try it. Just plug
it in the
drive.
It's probably just the operating system.
Okay.
Good luck.
Because the drive is spinning. So.
Right. Yeah. Now, if the drive were not spinning, OnTrack has system recovery services, too, where you send the drive in, and they pull the data off the platter.
But that's a bit more.
That costs a lot.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It probably wouldn't be worth it.
Well, thank you for the call. Okay.
Yeah.
We have Jeff from Santa Cruz. Another data recovery question. Jeff, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, guys. I heard one of you mention a few minutes ago about data loss during a write operation. If you're trying to save a file to your hard disk and the power goes out, you lose that data that's in the process of being written. And I was wondering, is that still true for what's called a journaling file system? So I've heard a little bit about those lately.
Actually, journaling file system won't it'll help with that, but it won't be a guarantee. What a journaling file system does is make sure that the file system at large, the entire file system on your drive, will remain consistent. It doesn't actually protect each individual file. It's not
There are actually two kinds of journaling file systems. So a journaling file system in the sense of a big honking server running a mainframe operating system, that journaling file system is actually journaling every transaction to the hard drive and will save everything in progress. But when a journaling file system like Windows has or the Mac's going to be getting and Linux has, that kind of journaling file system is only journaling the file system consistency data. So the file can still be lost.
Right.
The file can still be lost, but your whole file system is not going to have to go through that big, long scan disk process.
Okay.
So it's a different kind of journaling file system, and it's not necessarily saving.
But even on a server journaling system, it's not guaranteed that write itself is going to be okay.
Well, it's depending on whether – the final write will be lost, but then when you reboot, it'll go back to the last the last state the
file
was in.
It also has to do with how the application you're using does its write. It could theoretically make a new file and write all the data to that and then erase the old one. In that case, you're probably going to be okay. You will not erase the old file, which is the pre-saved version, if you lose that consistency in a journaling file system.
Well, that's just a that's
Chris,
just an application.
Chris generally right that what he was talking about was full journaling versus just journaling the metadata. But there's still never quite a guarantee, especially with newer hard drives, with the fact that they have a write cache on them. So the operating system will send data to it, and drive will say, "I'm done. I'm finished with the operation," but it actually isn't. It's still in process.
Right.
It's just letting the operating system get on with it. And
that's right. And there's power outage there. The machine's going to think, well, yeah.
There's no guarantee. But
does that answer your question,
help.
Jeff, or your comment?
Yeah. It sounds like the journaling is not really designed for that. It's more designed to help servers and computers come back up quickly after a boot. Is that
exactly?
That's right. And databases actually have much better types of control like that. Like a database with journaling file system is going to be able to manage that a lot better because it won't actually erase. You know, if it's moving stuff, it won't.
Actually, when you have the high-end databases like Oracle doesn't even use a standard file system. The database itself is its own file system, and that's how they're able to get a lot of that data.
And then you have things like transactions, which you really can't lose data. That's the potential, at least. That's the possibility for it.
Okay, I've got one other question. I want to add my confusion to this whole UPS volts amp thing.
Okay.
The product of volts times amps is power. It's not energy. And since UPS stores energy, it seems that a more reasonable way to rate them would be volts times amps times some unit of time.
Yeah, and that's the thing they don't do. What they say is that it'll last about blah, blah, blah amount of time. What they're really saying is that if you have about this much consumption, this is about how long it will last. They don't tell you what the watt hours are, which would be, if they just told you the kilowatt hours, you'd be set. But they don't. They don't give you a measure of time, really. They just kind of say, if you run it at this, you'll get about 5 minutes. So
maybe if they said kilowatt hours or watt hours, it would sound more like a guarantee. Time,
yeah,
so
I think that's
maybe
probably
it's
what the
a
problem.
Liability thing.
They're just trying to obfuscate the.
I think it more comes down to they're not really sure. It's going to change over time because they're not going to put in really expensive batteries. So the batteries are going to actually keep a different charge over time. Uh-huh. So if they say it'll last a certain amount of time, and then after a month it doesn't do that anymore, then is their warranty invalid?
It's so true.
Yeah, I think what it's about.
I've played with a lot of UPSs, and they generally last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, right, that makes sense.
You need to replace batteries periodically?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't, and UPS companies are actually really good about recycling batteries.
Okay.
So, they are lead-acid batteries normally, that's why they're so heavy and everything, and it really is important. If you have a old UPS, do not throw that in the garbage. Take that in and have it replaced, have it to recycle just like a battery would be recycled.
If you have a UPS that just stopped working, chances are that it might be a fuse inside this
blown. Yeah, that's right, fuse. And you can also take your UPS, you can call the manufacturer that made it, and they will have a whole process for normally upgrading you to a new one. And you trade in your one and you get a discount. And that's the best way to do it for, problems of environmental dangers.
So you add the initial cost there periodically. Every 2 years you got to replace batteries on it, sounds like.
Yeah,
two or three years.
Right.
Yeah.
Depends on, of course, how much draw you're going to put on the battery. If you just charge the battery up full and you never have power outages, then it's not going to have any kind of memory problems. It's still going to fail over time, but not as bad.
And if you live in Santa Cruz County, well, last about a year.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these you could actually put water in, but that'd be risky about that.
No, they're usually sealed.
Yeah, well, you can open them, though.
Don't open them.
Too geeky of me. Sorry. Good luck.
Do that with yours, Lyle. Nobody else do that.
Actually, if you're moving and you're going to be storing the UPS, you do want to open it and disconnect the power lead inside for the battery.
And most of the ones that when you purchase them new, you actually have to open it up and connect the power lead because it's too dangerous to transfer it when it's connected. Harry from Carmel Valley, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, thanks. I have some concept issues on
can you speak up?
Yes, concept issues on Wi-Fi with a Windows program. And what I'd really like to know is the concept of the difference between a router and a hub, and with the goal being to run a DSL through PacBell, so I think it's dynamic, to run through either a router or a hub to get it to an access point for home Wi-Fi use. I've run into a little problem in getting the DSL to run through either one and to the access point and make it work to be able to connect the DSL when it runs through either one. So I'm just wondering about the concepts of what these two devices do, the router and the hub, and what to be looking for to make the connection.
Well, when you're actually running your broadband into your house, you've got a modem, whether it be a DSL
Correct.
Or cable.
Yeah.
Now, if you run that directly into your hub, certainly you can have a machine hooked up to that hub that's going to be using the addresses that you are given by your ISP.
Uh-huh.
And it can have access. Now, so if you
the hub is going to be a straight through, like a split.
Right. And you may be sharing that connection through all the computers, but only the computer with the addresses that you are given will have access to the broadband, the internet connectivity.
Okay.
Now, if you wanted to share that connection with a bunch of computers, you would need a router.
Or a software router.
Right. Now, a computer can be a software router, and with the right kind of software, you can share that connection.
Well, the goal is to be able to plug a card in a laptop and have the same connection somewhere else in the house.
It's gotten to be really simple now that you can go to Fry's or CompuSense, and I've seen incredible specials for Christmas where there are on our DSL. Or they're basically their wireless routers that will give you several ports of Ethernet and a wireless port, and it'll protect them all and put them all on
That's the best way to go, as a wireless router.
And they're well under $100 now.
Wireless router will have an access point built into it?
Yes.
Because then you can have all your machines that are hooked to it through a cable or wirelessly.
And they're really easy to set up. Right. They're really easy to set up, and I've been amazed watching the prices drop this past year, and just bought my parents one, and it was under $100.
Okay. Now, myself at home, what I do is I have a modem going into a router that then goes to another switch to all my machines, and then I have a gateway, a wireless gateway, which is hooked up to that switch, and then it transmits wirelessly. So the router does all of my serving of addresses to all the machines through what's called DHCP.
Uh-huh.
Miles, do you know DHCP?
Dynamic
Host Configuration Protocol.
Right, and with DHCP enabled, you don't need to worry about any of the addresses in your computer. As long as you say DHCP enabled and you've got it set up correctly in the router, you're good to go.
And most of these new routers will do that.
Automatically.
Yeah.
Almost no
configuration. The big thing to think of, to just make sure, is that your modem coming in, the modem box out the outside of that, is a local area to only the amount of IP address ranges that you have purchased. Normally one. Sean has five, for example.
And it changes all the time with the dynamic, right?
Sometimes, yeah. And with the dynamic, it's probably going to only be one IP address. And then on that side, think of that as a very small private LAN. And then if you want another LAN with multiple machines, you're going to have to have a router in between there to route the information between the two LANs.
Right.
That's the general.
And routers can automatically dial that number for you.
Yeah.
It's called PPPP.
Okay, the simplest way is to get the wireless router.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. And a lot of them, of course, have static LAN and a wireless.
I saw two of them at Fry's for about $150. Or not Fry's, Costco, here in town.
Now, someone called in, Wally called in and reported that Office Max has a 50-volt amp UPS for under $20. But a 50-volt amp, it's not going to last you very long. Like, you might not have enough time to shut your OS down.
That's way too small.
Yeah.
Unless you have no monitor connected to it, you know how to shut down your OS without a monitor.
Without a monitor, though, that's getting pretty sketchy.
But that would be good for peripherals.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. Or maybe even a...
Or like to hook up to your TiVo.
Right?
That's not a bad idea.
Most modern computers these days, with the processors and the 2 gigahertz plus ranges, need about a 350-watt power supply. And a good 20-inch monitor needs about 300 watts of power. So I would say you need at least a 600 VA UPS if you were really running an enthusiast rig.
Now, one thing that small UPS could be handy for is if you plug your the things that are getting you onto the internet, so your DSL modem and your hubs and stuff.
Yeah.
That way you won't lose your connection when the power goes out as well, which could be very important. A lot of times the information you want to save is not just on your computer, but it's part of that connection. So you're downloading a file or you're sending an email or something like that, and you want to be able to finish what you're doing. And it might not do you a lot of good for your computer to stay up if your connection goes down. So you can plug everything in to a UPS or have a separate UPS for your wireless.
And don't be afraid to think outside the box. If you lose power, you're not using your computer, and you need to grind your coffee, plug it into your UPS.
Yeah, and you can grind your coffee. Yeah. We have Bruce from Monoway. Hello, Bruce. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah. Don't have any questions tonight about things like Red Hat's new way of allocating runtime levels.
That was a great question. I was so glad Miles was able to answer that week. So, what's your comment then?
No, my thing that tonight I'm just going to admonish the audience. They really ought to be listening to you because I do tech support, and this is a really big problem on... especially for small businesses, because what happens is that a lightning strike not so much hits the power lines, it hits the phone lines, it gets in through the modem.
Protect your phone.
Yeah, and I can't tell you.
And let's talk about a small business with 10 machines. What happens when that happens?
It's pretty pretty grim because the business is down. They lose the motherboard on the server and all the network cards. And I've handled lots of calls like this, and every summer we lose about 2-3 customers for just this type of emergency.
Is there a good solution for that?
Yep, exactly the one you've been saying.
So when you get the UPS, make sure you plug your phone line, your DSL line, or your network connection through that box.
That's right, and they have these little connectors in the UPS that are just for that, and it'll tell you in the...
And it's your experience. Have you seen a situation where all the network drives, all the network cards were been hosed, but they did have a filter like that? Or is it always taken care of if they've got a filter?
It's always been taken care of.
Okay. That's,
yeah. An important note with regards to lightning strikes, when people go like, well, what's the chance I'm going to be hit by lightning? The lightning doesn't actually have to hit the where you're at to do it. A lightning strike that happens somewhere in the near in the general vicinity
right.
can also have a big effect.
3 or 4 kilometers from you will
we're
still cause problems.
We're all connected by metal wires.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely connected. Well, thank you, Bruce, for the call.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for this really good program. I just hope, I wish a lot of our customers could pay attention to it.
But
that'd put you out of business.
We're going to talk really briefly. We only have a few minutes. What does happen when you do get your machine destroyed by a power problem?
Depends. There's
depends.
So many different things
well,
that power can affect.
You have parts.
You
dying.
Call GeekSpeak is what you do.
you start troubleshooting it.
One of the major things, if you push the power, after the power comes back on, you get everything plugged in, make sure everything's plugged in, after the power's up. You try pushing the power button and nothing at all happens, you probably have a bad power supply. Right, people?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, typically.
And,
yeah.
And if you smell smoke or hear
turn it
stuff,
off.
Plug, turn it off really it. Fast, and that probably means your motherboard has fried.
Or another card, or you want to open it up and see where
the
burnt.
Smoke's coming
yeah.
from.
You might get a good souvenir out of it. Yeah, a little
sometimes
bit
you get a smell of ozone
piece.
In the air as well.
In general, you can replace a power supply pretty easily. You just need to know a lot about what you're doing.
It's so four screws on the back of the case, and you need to disconnect all of the wires that are inside.
And you need to buy one. And you can, if you know a little bit about electronics, you can go ahead and go to your local electronics store and say,
right.
I need a power supply. They'll sell it to you. They're not that expensive, right, Mal?
They're going to range anywhere from $30 to like $150.
Actually,
it's right in the middle. For
yeah.
the middle.
Often power supplies are more expensive than cases with power supplies, funny enough. So if you go to Fry's, don't just price plain power supplies. Go look at the cases with power supplies. Oftentimes, they're cheaper.
A lot of times, the power supplies that come with the cases are cheaper in quality, though.
It's
so
true.
That's why
that's true.
Sometimes you don't want to get the ones that come with the case.
And if you don't know much about power supplies, take it out of your computer and take it with you to the store to make sure that you match it up with the... Because there are different size power supplies. You want to make sure that you put the right one in your case.
And when you're doing this, if you don't feel comfortable, of course, you can just take the entire computer into most computer stores, and they'll set you up. John, is there anything to know if you have a Mac and you got some problems with power and your computer doesn't come back on? What's some things to look at?
Well, if it's a power supply problem and you have an all-in-one, like an iMac, you're kind of hosed. You can't replace the power supply because it's built into the logic board. You have to take it in to the dealer and have them service it. There's really not much else. I mean, actually, there is a hard drive error that can cause your computer to not come up at all. And it could definitely happen after power has gone out.
But once again, you're going to a dealer.
But once
to
again,
have it
yeah, once yeah. again, you got to take it into the dealer.
So you're basically saying don't try to open an iMac.
To install memory, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And something else I want to make sure that people know is that you don't have to get a power supply that exactly matches the output of the one that you had. You can get one that's more powerful.
But don't get one that's less.
Don't get one that's less. So if you got a 200-watt power supply, don't be afraid to get a 300 or 350-watt. They're switching, which means that they're only using as much power as the computer needs to use. But what's nice is you've got that extra headroom in case you throw another hard drive in the future.
Or more fans for a better processor or something.
Right.
Or you overclock.
And spend the extra money on quiet technology. Makes a big difference.
Quiet. What do you mean by quiet technology?
You can buy power supplies these days that are actually rated for decibel level. And they have quieter fans. And it really makes a big difference, especially if you don't want to have an airplane under your desk, you know, while you're working.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I'm glad that you all joined me. I'm glad that everybody called in. It was a wonderful call-in show. I appreciate everyone calling in. If you didn't call in and joined GeekSpeak, if no one called in, it would just be a bunch of geeks talking, and it just wouldn't be fun for anybody. Maggie, thank you for taking that deluge of phone calls that we got today. We'll be back next week on GeekSpeak. We're going to be talking about handheld Christmas gifts, handheld devices. And Chris Dunphy is going to be in again to talk about new devices, and all of us are going to offer our suggestions for high-tech gifts this season. Coming up next is Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo. We're on the web at kusp.org. My name is Lyle Troxell, and we'll see you next week.